This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Peace talks between Israel and Hamas are resuming at an Egyptian resort city on this, the two-year anniversary of the militant group's surprise attack that triggered the bloody conflict. A federal judge blocking the Trump administration's efforts to send National Guard troops to Portland, Illinois, and Chicago, suing to stop the Guard from coming to that state. However, says ABC's Peter Haralambos,
it's a bit of a tightrope in terms of what a city can actually do to impede federal law enforcement and the National Guard, and what the Trump administration will theoretically do in response. On Monday afternoon, President Trump was asked about this, and he suggested that he might even invoke the Insurrection Act if cities across the country continue to push back against his work.
The government shutdown drags on. No new talks are scheduled on ending it. It's starting to affect the nation's airports, where flight attendants have been calling in sick. They're among the hundreds of thousands of workers furloughed during the stalemate. Actually, air traffic controllers. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A one-vehicle crash injured a passenger. Vernon County Sheriff Roy Torgerson reports that Sunday morning at approximately 11 o'clock, the Sheriff's Office 911 Dispatch Center received a report of a single vehicle crash in the town of Viroqua. April Ann Sullivan, 44, of Reedstown, was traveling east on County Road SS east of Lewison Road. She reported being distracted and went off the right side of the roadway on a curve. The vehicle struck an embankment, overturned, and came to rest on its top. April Sullivan was evaluated at the scene, but refused transport to the hospital. Her passenger, a 41-year-old male from Viroqua, was transported to Vernon Health in Viroqua by Gunderson Tri-State Ambulance. Governor Tony Evers, together with the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin, have announced Wisconsin residents can now access Inflation Reduction Act home energy rebates directly at retail locations with instant discounts and post-purchase rebates. Through the Home Electrification and Appliance Rebates Program, customers can purchase qualifying electric appliances bought in-store or online, building upon the contractor-based rebates available since late 2024. Households earning less than 80% of the area's median income may get 100% of project costs covered, up to $14,000. Households earning 80 to 150% of the area's median income may qualify for 50% of the project costs, also up to $14,000. Visit the Focus on Energy Safe Switch Guide for assistance with making the switch from gas to electric. To check qualifications, find income limits, or apply, visit focusonenergy.com/IRA-here. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Another Brewers comeback. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers with a 7-3 win over the Cubs last night in Milwaukee. The crew now up 2-0 in the best of five series, which now moves to Chicago tomorrow afternoon, just after 4 o'clock. Manager Pat Murphy.
How does this team have the best record in baseball? Nobody predicted they'd be over 500. And then we have all the injuries. Certainly nobody was banking on us.
Home runs from Andrew Vaughn, Jackson Churio, and William Contreras, who says he dedicates it to the fans.
I'm going to do everything for the Brewer fans. I'm going to do everything for my teammate. I want to be one of the best on the plate. I want to be the best catcher. They have to look control how play. I want to bring that energy too for the team. And now it's showtime.
The Cubs now down 2-0.
After getting off to a great start, those mistakes were 2-3 run homers is going to be, you're not going to win playoff games giving up 2-3 run homers. That was just too much to overcome.
That's Cubs manager Craig Counsell with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Finally, a stretch of some crisp fall weather for today. Plenty of sunshine, high temperatures in the comfortable mid-60s. For tonight, mostly clear, chilly with lows in the mid-30s. On Wednesday, more of the same. Plenty of sunshine with highs again in the mid-60s. Right now, it's 47.
where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Wisconsin farmers, how are they faring? The fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke will join us in hour number two. Don't miss it.
Matinere on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
This one should be good. Here we go. All right.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, good you're start. Listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. He still isn't wearing a cowboy hat. I don't know what's up with that. I'm a little upset. Maybe he's got boots on. Maybe that's it.
I got the boots.
There we go. He's got the boots. He's the founding editor of Up North News. It's Pat Kreitlow.
That would be me. I think we're going to go visit the Fort Worth Stockyards today and get a feel for, you know, what those cowboys do with the longhorn steers and things like that. My daughter who lives down here can't wait to show it off. So
she's really excited about that.
She is. Well, I've seen some video when she's taken other guests there. So apparently it's a big deal. So I will be talking about cattle tomorrow. I promise. But I do have the boots. I actually do have a very good looking black cowboy hat. I don't have any need to wear it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything that's deserving of having to pack that thing away.
Oh, so. You didn't bring it?
I did not bring it. But,
dude.
You know, I might see a better one. So
you might see a better one. I'll give you that.
I might have two cowboy hats by the time this is all said and done. Nice to have you back here. It's just about, well, it's 7:07 right now. And coming up this hour, we're going to be talking to Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association and dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser. We'll talk about the apple crop in Wisconsin. We'll talk about the trade war. We're going to talk a little bit about that in this segment as well, and the ways that the government shutdown is being made worse by people like Donald Trump and his transportation secretary, Sean Duffy. That's all coming up. First, let's check the mailbag here. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. Clear skies, 40 degrees right now. Yesterday, he was doing paperwork for the mowing season. Took pictures of the farmers that leased my family's property that were chopping up corn. We talked about Reading Rainbow in the last segment, and Alicia was all over that in YouTube, saying Reading Rainbow is very much a millennial thing, so that's great. We were talking about the Ozzy Osbourne documentary coming out, and Tony puts up, there's just always something interesting about a guy who eats bats, you know, just saying. On Banned Book Week, which you can read about in the Up North News Daily newsletter, Alicia says that the Milwaukee Public Library has a great TikTok on banned books. The Milwaukee Public Library has had a lot of great TikToks. And so, yes, I would definitely be looking forward to reading about that. Let's see. Tony also was expressing his happiness with the great emotions of Jacob Mizorowski coming out of the bullpen yesterday. And Roger from Stevens Point says, I'm grateful for Andrew Vaughn's home run, which was the first inning equalizer in yesterday's game. Yes, absolutely. For folks that might have missed it, and you know, some of us did go to bed early, but it felt like the game was well in hand. The Brewers defeated the Cubs last night in Game 2 of the National League Division Series. Final score 7-3, and all of the runs for the Brewers came on home runs this time, compared to Game 1 where the Brewers scored 9 times and none of them came off of home runs. But yeah, you had the Andrew Vaughn three-run homer in the bottom of the first to offset a Cubs three-run homer in the top of the first. You had a William Contreras solo shot, and then you had Jackson Churio with his own three-run homer to help the Brewers beat up the Cubs and take a 2-0 lead in the series. And so they are just one win away from going to the National League Championship Series, where they will face the winner of the Dodgers-Phillies series, which the Dodgers are up 2-0 on Philadelphia. It was a bullpen game for the Brewers because Brandon Woodruff is out with an injury, so Aaron Ashby opened things up. He did give up that three-run homer in the first, but after that, how's this for a bullpen game? Nick Mears, Jacob Mizorowski, Chad Patrick, Jared Koenig, Trevor McGill, and Abner Uribe. 7 1/3 innings of shutout relief and allowed just one hit. And just a couple of base runners. Jacob Mizorowski threw 3 scoreless innings to earn the win. And he had pitches that topped out Parker at 104.3 miles an hour. And I know it sounds like hyperbole, but I really do. I'll say it again. One of these times, you're gonna hear the announcers going, "Oh, his arm fell off. His arm's just laying there in the grass." So, yep. I could see that happening.
It's like a Toy Story or something when Woody's arm falls off.
Exactly, and he just waves it and plugs it back in and throws it at 105 miles an hour. You know, the next time around, could totally see that happening. I was a little concerned when he ran all the way to first base on a ground out to make the play himself, but he had acknowledged after the game he was just feeling so pumped up. He was afraid he would overthrow Andrew Vaughn at first base, which, you know,
he's done before.
I could totally see that happening, and it would just, I would go crazy if that happened.
Yeah, he did the right thing. I was worried that he was going to blow out a hamstring when he jumped up in the air celebrating.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. I mean, because again, you can get some really goofball injuries, like people who've stomped on home plate coming in from a home run and twist an ankle or something.
Did you see during the Phillies game before the Brewers game that an umpire definitely pulled a hamstring while making an out call?
No. Oh, no.
It was in all of its slow motion glory, too, because it was a replay review.
Embarrassing.
And he just goes, he punches him out, and all of a sudden he's like, oh!
Oh, no.
That sucks.
See, even if you're an umpire, you got to do those stretches, you know. No, it was one of those cases where, again, the Dodgers-Phillies game ran a little long. And so they started the Brewers-Cubs game over on TNT before moving it back to TBS. We're here at my daughter's place using one of those satellite systems that doesn't really, you know, you don't pick the channel so much as you pick the game. And then it goes to that channel. But of course, if it's on a different channel, good luck going to find it. I mean, we did eventually find a way to find the right channel to do that. But it's one of those TV things that just always bugs me. It's like, just put the game where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, you know? You should. But you know what? You don't need to worry about it when you listen to it on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Funny that you should say that, because game three, oh, I've got my graphic is wrong on there. Game three of the series will be at Wrigley Field, and that will be tomorrow afternoon. The pregame will get started at 3:30 on several Civic Media stations, Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Park Falls, and Hayward, where you could conceivably see the Brewers sweep. Now, again, if they don't, then game four will be at Wrigley. And then if needed, a deciding game five would be back at American Family Field come Saturday. So there, again, it'd be nice to wrap it up tomorrow, but you just got to win one out of the next three.
Yeah. I think as long as we win it at Chicago, I will be happy.
That would feel really nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could totally get into that. So, again, congrats to the Brewers for a nice victory there and giving us a little distraction from some of the realities of our headlines today, which include, you know, a trade war, that include a government shutdown and things like that. You had President Trump saying yesterday, indicating that he would be supportive of doing some kind of a bailout plan for America's farmers, since China's buying nothing, not the $12 billion worth of soybeans, for example, that they typically buy in a year, but zero. And so all these farmers have no market to to go to with their beans and corn and everything else. So Trump's quote from yesterday was, "I'm going to do some farm stuff this week." That'd be the president of the United States telling you and making farmers feel real good, saying, "I'm going to do some farm stuff this week." The stuff is probably going to be some kind of checks that get sent to farmers to, you know, keep them from going out of business. It's the same thing that happened in 2018 when Trump started a trade war with China. It cost taxpayers $20 billion to help support farmers. And by the way, we got nothing for that. I mean, eventually China and the U.S., they just resumed trade slowly and eventually. But at the time, China went and got their soybeans from Brazil. And guess what they're doing right now? They're getting their soybeans from Brazil and Argentina, a country we just sent billions of dollars to in a government bailout. And Republican lawmakers told the New York Times that they think that a potential farm bailout this time around won't cost $20 billion, but cost more like $50 billion. And what gets me is how they say this so nonchalantly, like, well, you know, it might cost us $50 billion. The people who used to be described as fiscal conservatives, but don't think twice about this. It does not occur to them to say, hey, maybe this guy, the president, yeah, he says he's in our party, but he's driving up the debt. He's driving up budget deficits. He's not accomplishing anything with these tariffs. We're Congress. We can actually limit these tariffs and find another way to negotiate better trade deals. We could maybe do that. But they don't. Everybody's just going along with what one guy says, no matter how uninformed it might be, no matter how harmful it might be, because he's their guy. Take the last shutdown, which not only had the big farm bailout, but you also had air travel that was starting to get gummed up as air traffic controllers and people working TSA and others stopped showing up for work because they weren't getting paid. They were using sick days, vacation days. They weren't taking extra shifts. You would think, again, maybe this is something we want to avoid again. But we are heading that way again. And that's according to the U.S. Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, former congressman from up north, who knows a thing or two about bad budget deals and government shutdowns. And yet, what is he saying? He's basically threatening, promising that everybody's going to be facing travel delays. He says, and he's saying this in from the standpoint of safety, I guess. He says, quote, "If we think there's issues in the airspace, we will shut it down. We will close it down. We will delay." That's his way, I guess, of saying to Democrats, you guys ought to blink. You guys ought to cave, or else there's going to be air travel delays. When, again, the better course of action would be for people like Sean Duffy to acknowledge that Americans actually don't want massive health care cuts and the government shutdown that you have forced as a result of it. Because air traffic controllers, they are required to work through the shutdown, but they're only going to get paid retroactively whenever the shutdown ends. And it was their failure to show up for work last time around that led to the eventual deal that ended the government shutdown on Monday. Duffy said that officials had seen, quote, a slight tick up in sick calls from controllers since the current shutdown began last week. The FAA has already started to slow traffic, did so at three airports yesterday using a ground delay program. That's a traffic management tool in which the agency holds flights from departing other airports if they are headed for one with limited capacity. And as somebody who has flown this week and has had to sit on the tarmac for a while waiting for takeoff, I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to that possibility again later this week, flying back out of Dallas later in the week if this thing continues to drag on. And all indications are it will continue to drag on. We'll find out for sure in a live report from Washington, D.C. in our next hour when we talk to Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom and also author of the Below the Beltline below the Beltway newsletter that you can get through Courier Newsroom. We'll talk to Cam Stevenson live from Washington, D.C., and Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area about things that are happening in the Wisconsin state capitol. Again, that's all in our 8 o'clock hour. Coming up in about 15 minutes here, we will talk to Hans Breitenmoser and Sheila Everhart. A little more farm talk when we come back, especially emphasizing the apple harvest for this year. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Powered by friendship, fun, and manager Murph's Pocket Pancakes, the Milwaukee Brewers have a new franchise regular season record of 97 wins. Congratulations.
Unreal.
Now it's on to the postseason.
The summer of Sal, maybe the fall of Freeland.
Catch all the action on your station for the Brewers in October. 107.7 FM, 1450 AM, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Two U.S. Supreme Court cases this term may allow the conservative majority to strike down Voting Rights Act protections of minority voters and one of the few remaining limits to big money campaign spending in federal elections. Louisiana versus Calais, a racial gerrymandering case, returns to the High Court October 15th for additional arguments after initial oral arguments March 24th. Louisiana's black voters won a second majority-minority congressional district under the Voting Rights Act, but a group of, quote, non-African-American individuals appealed the new map, claiming it was discriminatory to them under the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas have railed against such minority protections in voting rights, education, and workplaces. Another case, National Republican Senatorial Committee versus Federal Election Commission, attempts to strike down campaign spending limits by party-affiliated groups as a violation of free speech. While national political parties can make unlimited donations to a federal candidate, they are limited in what's called coordinated spending with a candidate, which can include renting venues, sending mail, or most importantly, advertising. It could open another floodgate of money in our elections. The cases have far-reaching implications for equity in our elections process, and we'll be following both carefully in the coming months. I'm Brian Beal.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
Mike Brenninger is joining us on our morning show from WRCO Radio. He's been on in many capacities, but most recently as an author. You know, you've added that to your resume there, Mike.
How about that? Still can't believe that's true, but it is.
How's it been going? How's the Pulling Together book been received?
It's really well. In fact, maybe beyond my expectations, our publisher said he's shocked. It's, you know, selling thousands of copies, and he was surprised that it took off the way that it has taken off.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's kind of hitting a note with people. It's talking about working together and getting positive things accomplished, even across, or especially across ideological divides. You know, today it's the right, the left, fighting, nobody's getting much done. And this is kind of a solution to that. And the other thing is it's giving a lot of smaller communities hope, because if you just look and say, well, there's not much going on. And I don't just want to say Richland Center. I'm saying small town America is kind of experiencing this. We seem to be hollowing out. Our young people are leaving, not much encouraging things happening in the community. And when it turns around and you start seeing those positive things happen, then people get excited about that. They want to see their communities thrive. And that's really the theme of the book. It's not like we've turned around thousands of places yet, but we hope that is eventually what happens.
Certainly there are enough of them. And I think when people read those about what can happen in a community, they have to be inspired.
Right? Yeah, well, that's why we've got stories, testimonial type stories in the book of how it actually happened, you know, but that communities have been turned around, or at least projects. But a lot of times it's significant turnarounds in communities.
Well, you're going on tour. Tell us about that.
We've got a new Wisconsin tour, although one part of it goes into Upper Michigan, UP. But for the most part, it's a Wisconsin tour where it's a tour for the book, but we're also bringing in a special guest speaker, guy who's been working in this area for a long time. But let me just talk about the tour to begin with. So it starts in Viroqua, and then it comes to Richland Center, so October 8th. And then we travel down to Platteville. We'll be in Monroe, Waukesha, up to Green Bay, over to Appleton, Wausau, Stevens Point, Chippewa Falls. So it's, you know, we're trying to cover a lot of the state with this. Now, we've already done, I don't know, what, 15 or 20 book launches in other places, but these are places that we're going with this specific tour and this guy from Nebraska named Jeff Yost.
So Jeff is kind of the difference between the book launch and what you're doing now then.
Right. So this is a book promotion, but it's not really a book launch. And Jeff Yost, I'm just going to give a little bit of his lowdown here. He's the president and CEO of the Nebraska Community Foundations. So he has, in Nebraska, he has about over 270 communities that he's working with all the time. He's set up community foundations. So there's people leaving money in these community foundations. Usually it's legacy money that is then being reinvested in the community, and they're generating all kinds of great ideas, and it's caused communities to turn around in Nebraska. Some people might think, well, big deal, Nebraska, you know, they got less than 2 million people there. But in some ways, it's an amazing success story. So even though we've got three times the population in Wisconsin, we still face the same kind of decline in small communities that Nebraska does, and Nebraska has been able to turn that around. So this guy is a voice that is so needed, especially in rural communities, but his methodology, the way he's doing things, is really applicable to small communities, medium communities, and large communities. So he's going to be kind of the main headliner on this tour. In a lot of ways, the book will be a subtext, although there are some of the places that we're going to go that we will be doing workshops based on the book. So it'll be Jeff Yost presenting what's taken place in Nebraska, and especially talking about generational wealth coming down and staying in communities. And then we will do a workshop for pulling together and teach people how to make good ideas become a reality in their own community, how they can, you know, focus on some of the assets and resources they have, get people together and see amazing things happen. So that's kind of the focus of it. A few of the places that we're going, we've already been, but they asked us to come back. They said, please come back. We kind of got the ball rolling, but now we want to get it rolling faster.
That's a good sign, though, I think, isn't it?
I'm just excited about that. It's much better than saying, yeah, thanks a lot, get out of here, and we hope we never see you again.
You know, a good place to start, I think, with some of these, you know, in some of the small towns, is focusing on things for the youth. You know, is that one of the things that they focus on? Because I think that's one of the things we can all agree on. We want the best for our kids, right?
Yeah, and that's really, most communities, smaller communities especially, but most communities in general, want to see their youth thrive. They want to see them love the community, and they want to see them consider staying in the community. So that is a special focus, both for Jeff Yost and for the Pulling Together book. It's like, how can we make a community attractive for young people to say, I'm going to plant my family there. We're going to grow in that community. We're going to spend our money at the grocery store. We're going to send our kids to the schools. We're, you know, we are part of that community. And the amazing generation of what happens when a single family stays in a community or comes to a community is quite, it's not just financial. You know, they bring all their talent, their resources, their energy comes with them. And so that is one of the keys to make a community alive, is something for the youth, not only to do, but to be interested in staying or coming back and raising their family there.
Sometimes it's wage disparity, though. You know, a lot of people, you know, you have a lot more money working elsewhere, but there are opportunities to work at home now that never used to be, too, right?
Okay, so a couple of years ago, I was out in California, and I saw the prices of things out there. I thought, my goodness, how can anybody live in this state? I mean, a gallon of gasoline back then, I think here it was maybe $3, and there it was $6. And that went across the board with everything.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henricks.
News from the center, WRCE.
107.7 WRCE, news from the center and home to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin lawmakers frustrated at proposed fee increases coming from the Department of Agriculture. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Tuesday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. We'll have details on what one state legislator's advising farmers to do. That's next.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empowered Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
State Senator Pat Teston is the chair of the Senate Agriculture and Tourism Committee, and he is asking all livestock operators to speak out against proposed fee increases that are now being asked for by the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Some fees would go up as much as 1,700%. And because of a recent Supreme Court ruling, Teston says his hands are tied to try to change it.
There is virtually nothing I can do, and it is so frustrating. And I can only imagine for those individuals who work in this industry, who are going to have their pocketbooks detrimentally impacted. I can't even imagine the frustration that they're feeling right now. And so, we're trying to do what we can to raise awareness and encourage people to reach out to the department. And I'm hoping they reverse course, because this is absolutely a boneheaded maneuver.
Wisconsin Senator Pat Teston. Now, they're accepting comment at the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection on these proposed livestock licensing fee increases until October 15th. If you want to find details, we've got them up on our website now, MidwestFarmReport.com. And you can also hear the rest of my conversation with Pat Teston on our playlist. Markets are next.
You can't do the same thing and expect different results. So here's some advice. Change the seed and you'll change the game. Zitavo soybean seed is the seed you've always wanted. It's been tested again and again, going through at least 12 quality control protocols, because 11 wasn't enough. All to ensure that you get consistent performance from every seed that can pay off with better soybean yield. Zitavo soybean seed is ready to raise the bar for soybeans. Are you? Learn more at xitavosoybeanseed.com. Always read and follow label directions.
Monday, the barrel cheese was unchanged. 40-pound block cheese was down 4 at 175, and AA butter dropped 5.5 to 169.5 per pound. This morning, November Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 6, 16.97. December new crop corn up a penny at 422. November beans are up 2, 10.19. July new crop wheat's unchanged, 555 a bushel. Just a quick market snapshot on a Tuesday. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
107.7 WRCE, news from the center.
And home to Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Finally, a stretch of some crisp fall weather for today. Plenty of sunshine, high temperatures in the comfortable mid-60s. For tonight, mostly clear, chilly with lows in the mid-30s. On Wednesday, more of the same. Plenty of sunshine with highs again in the mid-60s. Right now, it's 47.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The incomparable Jane Matner. You're a coffee drinker.
I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning for most of my career. Yeah. You need coffee.
Something.
Or a slap across the face or something. How much coffee do you drink a day? How many cups
not
of coffee?
Not as much as you might think. Maybe 2 16-ounce cups, more or less. Maybe not quite that much some days.
Zahmer, is that true?
I mean, from what I can verify, I don't know what he drinks in the privacy of his own home.
No one knows.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Chihuahua.
On the next Nightlight, comedian Jim Flanagan joins to talk a Wisconsin date. Then a mystery guest drops by. Let's light it up Tuesday style.
Nightlight with Pete Chihuahua. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Coming up in 1 hour, we'll be talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor, and he helps put together Civic Media's new daily newsletter. Sign up for it at civicmediatoday.substack.com. Again, civicmediatoday.substack.com. All right, always nice to welcome back in a couple of friends talking to us about Wisconsin agriculture. That, of course, would be Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer from the Merrill area up in Lincoln County, and Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. Great to see you both, as always. We're going to get to a very plentiful and variety-filled apple crop coming up in just a bit here. But Hans, I also wanted to, of course, take note of the government shutdown and its impact on farmers. And then there's also some upbeat news about it being National 4-H Week. So let's get the not so happy stuff out of the way first here. A government shutdown makes for, you know, a lot of political headlines, but it's got real life impact. And what does that mean for farmers across America, for example, with the Farm Service Agency offices closed?
Well, it sort of stinks, Pat, because the Farm Service Agencies are our local connection to the federal government and any federal government programs and so forth. And one of the things that happens this time of the year, of course, is that there's a lot of corn and soybeans being harvested. And what a lot of guys will do is especially when prices are low, they harvest those commodities, and rather than sell them at harvest low prices, they will borrow against them through the Farm Service Agency. Because it helps cash flow. And right now, if you try and call the Farm Service Agency, you get a recording that says that they're not there. So it does. It's very difficult because we don't have that resource to work with at a time of the year when, you know, we sort of need it. And I think the other thing to that I'd like your listeners to understand is that all those nameless, faceless, terrible bureaucrats that are getting laid off all the time are not just a bunch of people that live in Washington next to the Capitol. They're people that live in Wausau, Wisconsin, and in, you know, Chippewa Falls and all the places around. Our friends and neighbors are the ones who are right now sitting at home, and they would rather be at work. So it's not just the farmers that are being impacted, but it's the people in those offices.
Yeah, absolutely. And with those offices closed, it means farmers are not getting access to farm program signups, no disaster aid processing, no loan approvals, no access to market data that the government normally provides, and more. So I just wanted to get some of the real life impact of this ongoing shutdown. All right. It's 4-H week. Hans, we'll start with you and then over to Sheila. Talk about the significance of 4-H. Is it, again, for a city kid? For a city kid, they go, oh, that's something I've heard of, but was that something from the olden days of Wisconsin farming, or is that something still very relevant to rural life in Wisconsin
very
today?
Relevant. It's very relevant, and I think if you're a parent or a grandparent, please check out 4-H if you're not familiar with it, because there's just so many cool programs. Our kids have been in 4-H for, you know, years and years. And there's the usual things that people think of course, about bringing projects to the local county fairs and so forth. And that is a part of it. It's a big part of it. It's a really cool part of it. But there's also so many other things, like my children have taken advantage of really cool civic engagement type things and trips to, you know, exotic places like Washington, D.C. and New York and Philadelphia and so forth, and other places just right here in Wisconsin that I've chaperoned a couple trips for as well. And so it's a great opportunity for kids to learn leadership skills and really, you know, civic engagement and so forth. There's so many opportunities, educational opportunities and travel opportunities that 4-H offers that I think a lot of people just don't know about. And it's also a great place for grownups to get involved with, you know, with the rearing of our children as far as, you know, chaperoning these trips and so forth, because it does, by God, take a village.
It sure does. And Sheila, you know, for National 4-H Week, you talk as well about 4-H getting people ready for a career and frankly, just getting ready for life as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's all about celebrating our youth, helping them prepare for college and career and life readiness. You know, a recent study said that those children, those students involved with 4-H, likely to live life intentionally and with purpose, and three times as likely to participate in community service and volunteer in our communities. And as Hans mentioned, it's about leadership roles, planning events, running meetings, and organizing service projects. So support our local 4-H.
Absolutely. Again, for National 4-H Week. So we wanted to make sure that we made mention of those things. But let's also turn to something that's rather seasonal here. We have our share of apple orchards and products and varieties and things. And I mean, to be clear, I mean, it is a sliver of Wisconsin agriculture and, you know, national agriculture as well. But there's hardly anybody out there that wouldn't accept a slice of apple pie or have a glass of cider or Sheila just enjoy the experience of apple orchards in Wisconsin. So it may not be the biggest part of the ag industry, but it's one of the more visible ones and frankly, one of the more enjoyable and delicious ones.
Absolutely enjoyable and delicious. And my favorite fall food is not only apple pie, but caramel apples. And, you know, traveling from orchard to see who has the best caramel apples, that's right up my alley. October is National Apple Month, and we celebrate that in promoting the consumption and appreciation of our Wisconsin apples. This started in 1904, but, you know, people enjoy eating fresh apples, picking apples from the tree, learning about the best ways to bake apple desserts, and just to experience apple cider donuts, fresh apple cider. So it's important for us to go out and support our family farms and pick up some apples along the way. There's some really cool apples up in your neighborhood, Pat, Apple Orchard, all on County Highway 00. Are you familiar with some of those orchards, Pat?
I have definitely seen them, and they are most certainly busy places this time of year. And so tell folks a bit more about what you can expect if you want to go visit some of these orchards.
Right. You have Bushel and Peck on Highway 00 in Chippewa Falls, and the Connell Family Orchard. Family Roots Orchard is the oldest orchard up in your neighborhood. And then there's Dixon's Apple Orchard, and it's really interesting about Mr. Dixon, Fred. He had started growing a famous champagne apple that he helps to create some apple ciders and some apple hard apple ciders with that champagne apple. And on our Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association website, we have a blog page that just was launched yesterday talking about all these different apple orchards, like the Little Farmer in Malone over in Prescott. If you want to take a drive, there's Young Acres. Avenue Orchard is up there in Eau Claire. Of course, in the Gays Mills area, we have Sunrise Orchards that also have activities, and you can actually see them sorting and washing their apples and pressing that apple cider. Over in the Elkhorn area, we have Apple Barn Orchard and Winery, and you know, several of our orchards are also wineries, just like Sequest Orchard, and Lattenbach Orchard up in Fish Creek. And then we have M&T Gibbsville Orchard in Sheboygan Falls. And then Heritage Orchard, they're known for their fresh apple cider in Chilton area.
Very
nice. Do you like apple cider, Pat and Hans?
I like apple cider, and I like the hard cider as well. I was just going to ask Hans about that, if he's got a particular favorite apple product.
A good hard cider goes a long way, you know, after a hard day's work. But I wanted to mention Helene's Hilltop Orchard is 2 miles from my place, and absolutely a beehive of activity this time of the year. They do a wonderful job. They got lots of trees and a bakery, and it's just a total hot spot in our area this time of the year.
Yeah,
I love seeing Olivia and her husband, and they do great farm to table dinners, and I have toured their farm, and it's a beautiful bakery. So if you have a chance to visit Helene's Hilltop, get out there and enjoy the orchard.
There you go. For the hard cider now, we're turning to the adult portion of the apple discussion here. Again, it's a fermented beverage made from apple juice when the yeast converts the apple sugars into alcohol. And so, again, you've got different types, different flavor profiles. You're using different varieties with them. And so, Sheila, it's not a surprise that a place that, you know, started with, you know, the beer industry, but now we have our share of wineries in the area, that, you know, cider would also be a natural byproduct of some of the many good things we produce in Wisconsin.
Yes. And, you know, our farmers are innovative and they're creative. And so they always take a look at what they are producing and how can they add value to their crops. And by producing hard apple cider, that is just opening another market for them to sell their products.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the variety of products and how to use them, it's been a while since I learned this, but it took me a while to appreciate that, you know, not all apple varieties are created equal, and something that you might like to eat, you know, as a plain apple is not necessarily the best one for a pie or for jelly or something like that. And I know you shared with me a rather detailed chart of all the different apple varieties you can get and all the different ways you can use them, which is not to say you can't use them for everything, but, you know, some are going to taste better than others, I would imagine.
Absolutely, you know, and some of them are across the board because the chart was created by Sunrise Orchards and Gays Mills. And so if you take a Honeycrisp apple right across the board, they're perfect for everything. Eating, pie, sauce, baking, freezing, jelly, salad, and pickling. But if you take something like the Red Wisconsin Delicious apple, they're known for eating and they're known for salads. So, you know, when you're going out to pick your apple, of course you want to pick for flavor, but also decide if you're buying your apples in bulk, maybe you're going to get a full bushel of apples. You want to look at how are you going to utilize those apples, and finding the apple guide variety and availability and uses chart is a perfect way to help you make your apples go a lot further and last all the way through the winter season.
Yeah, I will second that by noting that, it's something when you realize that Red Delicious apples are wonderful for eating, you know, right off the table there, but are not necessarily going to be the best thing to put in a pie, and then you discover something else that is. At the other end of the spectrum, you mentioned Honeycrisp is like perfect for everything. That's so true that I sometimes have to remind myself, Hans, to go shop for some other varieties. Man cannot live on Honeycrisp alone. Well, maybe I could, but you really should find out what else is the right thing for you. I've talked about Sherry's Apple Crisp being just amazing. Do you have a favorite, either a pie or something else that's your favorite apple product besides the beverages, Hans?
Well, I was going to say the hard cider. You took my answer. Look at me, Pat. Do I look like a guy that's averse to apple pie?
No.
You've
got that all-American look to you as any dairy farmer would here in Wisconsin. And again, to learn more, you can always check out the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association website. And there's so many other resources to learn more about apples in Wisconsin. We definitely appreciate the diversion to visit a virtual orchard here for a little while. Hans, thank you. Sheila Everhart, thank you so much as always. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for supporting Wisconsin agricultural tourism and our family farms. We appreciate Civic Media.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, too. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom live on Capitol Hill coming up. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network, keeping you connected to your local community with real news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
The fall agriculture tourism season is underway, and from apple orchards to pumpkin patches, it's a great time to travel across the state. But have you ever thought about camping on a farm? There is a push to make a new law allowing farmers to host up to 3 paying campers without a license. Supporters say it's needed to help diversify their incomes.
To allow people to put a tent up in a pasture and experience stargazing, stay overnight in the pasture, and have rustic camping. When they're overnight for farm stays, pick up the eggs in the morning, have a farm breakfast.
That's Sheila Everhart with the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. You can learn more, including where to go this fall, at the website WIAGtourism.com. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
State Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner talking about this new piece of legislation in regards to housing. And who have you reached across the aisle and worked with on this issue?
I worked with folks like Rep. Armstrong, who our districts couldn't look any different. That when you center the actual experiences of your district, not your political parties, but the things that people need, there's a lot more alignment and possibility when that is the centerpiece.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
State Senator Jeff Smith, we're talking about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. Republicans blocked funding for this.
They instead sent the governor a 16-page letter blaming him for this problem. Well, it was in his budget. Once the budget is out of his office and in their hands, it's up to them. Our job is to manage the funding. We can do it, but the governor can't. So it's avoiding our own responsibility by not addressing that.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org, a public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Joanne Krulotz, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
Following the presence of E. coli bacteria detected in the water supply, Pine Valley Community Village is updating residents, families, staff, and the community of its plans to investigate and mitigate its water concerns while emphasizing that the health and safety of its residents and staff remain the top priority. Pine Valley first discovered the presence of bacteria in the water supply during routine monitoring at the end of September. Brittany Paulus is the nursing home administrator at Pine Valley Community Village.
Our requirement is we're supposed to take water samples every month. It's quarterly, but we do it monthly just because of a private well. On 9/22, we took our normal water sample in, and somehow the results came back that we were coliform positive. Immediately went to bottled water just because coliform itself, while it's not necessarily overly exciting, it can cause extra bacteria to grow, it can make people sick. So we did a lot of research, asked a lot of questions, you know, brought DHS in, asked DNR questions, reached out to well specialists, and we came to the consensus it was important to go to water was safe, that we knew was safe, that we knew wasn't going to have a bacteria in it until we got our second results. So essentially when we got the results on the 24th, so we sent them in on the 22nd, we got them back on the 24th, we had to send in a new sample on the 25th and wait. So we got our results on the 26th stating that one of our water samples from the second sample that we took was E. coli positive, which obviously is scary. We don't want that in our system. We don't want that in our pipes. We don't want that in our residents. So the original decision to go directly to bottled water when the first test positive without E. coli being present was the quickest and best move that we've made, because now here we are continuing with samples throughout the building. We've had DNR out for a level two. Can we figure out where this is coming from? The day DNR came out, we took samples from our reservoir, took samples from a fire hydrant that was across the road from us. We took it from our kitchen sink. We took it from the assisted living, and we took it from the skilled nursing side. Just kind of cover the basis of the entire building. All of them came back coliform positive. The fire hydrant and the reservoir both came back E. coli positive. So essentially, we have a lot to figure out with DNR, with the DHS, with infection preventionists, with public health.
Pine Valley continues to implement water safety protocols, including the use of bottled water for drinking, food preparation, bathing, and other needs. Corrective investigative actions are also being implemented.
We've chlorinated our reservoir as a precautionary measure. Essentially, what that means is we dumped 7 gallons of bleach into our reservoir. So we had our reservoir inspected back in June. So we reached out to the gentleman because essentially what I want to do is get cameras to go down and take a look into all of our pipes and essentially bomb our pipes with it. So turning on all the faucets, turning on all the showers, turning on everything that we use that has a water source. And then essentially we'll drain our reservoir and then sanitize and then go back to normal and hope that moving forward we figure it out. So if we have a pipe that happens to be faulty and has a crack or chips or a tiny little hole in it that can introduce that type of bacteria, then essentially we would dig that specific area up and repair that pipe or replace that pipe. But we have to find the source first. We have to find out where this is coming in. We need to keep the residents safe. We need to make sure that we can go back to business as usual. This is a shock to our residents. This is a shock to our staff and essentially all of us to try to navigate life after not being able to use your everyday water and being able to wash your hands, you know, with a sink. And we really had to accommodate those changes. But I'm hoping that we have the support of the county board. We're keeping them up to date, and hopefully we'll be able to just make those decisions on an emergency basis.
All residents will continue to be monitored closely and families will be kept updated. Officials with the Pine Valley Community Village are working closely with local and state health authorities to ensure the safety of the water supply and will provide further updates as soon as test results confirm the water is safe for normal use. Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss might not run for office next year. Speaking to WISN's Up Front, the Burlington Republican says he's not entirely decided. Voss has served in the Assembly since 2005 and has held the Speaker's seat since 2013. Voss recently faced a stiff primary challenge from supporters of President Donald Trump, who thought he should have done more to help the president during the aftermath of the 2020 election. He says he's excited to work with a governor other than Tony Evers, but that he'll make a decision in January of next year. At the Capitol, a bill to allow accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, to be built statewide may be amended. The measure would prohibit the units from being used as short-term rentals. During a public hearing, Representative Dave Armstrong said many communities lack the means to enforce that, and the bill specifies no penalties for violating the prohibition. The Rice Lake Republican told bill's author, Representative Joy Gobin, that adding a penalty would allow municipalities to generate revenue to cover enforcement costs. Gobin, a Hobart Republican noted community in her district, has seen a lot of growth in short-term rentals and said she'd be willing to work with Armstrong on an amendment. An ADU is a secondary housing unit, like a basement, apartment, or detached backyard cottage that includes a kitchen and bathroom facilities, offering homeowners rental income or space for family. Gobin's bill is part of a larger package from Assembly Republicans with the goal of alleviating Wisconsin's dire shortage of affordable housing. A new state law offers protections to victims of deep fakes. Republican State Senator Andre Jacques said victims whose images are manipulated into synthetic deep fake pornography for online display and distribution now have strong legal protections. Wisconsin Act 34, which Jacques authored with State Representative Brent Jacobson, was signed into law by Governor Tony Evers on Friday. Evers said that ensures the state's criminal code is updated to reflect the increasing use and potential misuse of artificial intelligence. Senator Jacques cited a study from the cybersecurity company DeepTrace, which found that about 96% of deepfake material is non-consensual pornography and exclusively targets and harms women. You've been listening to WRCE's local news on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google Play stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Today marks 2 years since the Hamas attacks that left at least 1,200 Israelis dead and more than 250 taken hostage. Talks on ending the war are taking place in Egypt. Here's ABC Chief Foreign Correspondent Ian Pannell.
President Trump optimistic about the chances of success.
We're going to have a Gaza deal, I'm pretty sure, yeah?
Growing numbers of Israelis now demanding an end to the war and the return of the hostages, among them the bodies of two Americans, Omar Neutra and Itay Chen.
The government shutdown goes on, both Democrats and Republicans digging in. No new talks are scheduled. The shutdown has led to air traffic control shortages at some airports, including Burbank, California, where the airport was forced to shut down last night. President Trump is now talking about invoking the more than 200-year-old Insurrection Act so he can send National Guard troops into cities where local leaders say they aren't wanted and aren't needed. This is ABC.